former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Excited for hour number two on the Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM, with Stormy Bonatoni enjoying her honeymoon. Congrats to the newlyweds, Stormy and Chris. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. Michael Lombardi just recorded the GM Shuffle Pod with Femi Bebefe, so he's taken care of on that.
And why am I here?
Because you're Michael. Mm. Or are you Stormy? Am I Michael?
No, you're Stormy.
Okay. Whatever, we're here.
Same color dice. Pretty much the same thing.
Basically. So we're here. We have an hour left. We have Mike Somich joining us in about 15 minutes, professional handicapper, and also he'll be part of some of our weekend programming coming up in the fall. Really excited to have Mike coming up on the show. He's been a frequent guest of ours here on the network, and we'll also get some insight into the Thursday night football game. We have Thursday night football.
You like to say that?
Yeah. Mike does stuff all the time.
Okay. All right. I just don't want you to get in trouble.
Oh, Mike has been an integral part of the network for some time. And then Jake Trotter will help us preview the Browns and Eagles tonight, since we do have NFL preseason week two coming up tonight, 7:30 Eastern. Eagles about a 3.5 to 4 point favorite, 35.5 I'm seeing now is that consensus total. But let's start with some news of the day. A lot of training camp stuff, JBT coming out. Right move or wrong move is how we'll lead into this stuff as well, as far as our NFL week one lines. So early this morning, before we were coming in here to Circa to do the show, Treylon Burks officially announced LCL sprain after the joint practice with the Vikings yesterday. They had the MRI results overnight. That has been confirmed, NFL Network reporting it first, so expected to be out multiple weeks. Status now for week one against the New Orleans Saints, very much up in the air. And so while Tennessee does bring in DeAndre Hopkins as wide receiver, certainly you were not feeling like the rest of the wide receiver core was great outside of Hopkins, and this does not help things with Burks now out.
Nope, and this is, so I do have a bet on Tennessee to have the worst record in the NFL. It's a 21-1. I think this is a team that, you know, and this isn't what you want to see, but it's a team that I think is somewhat top-heavy. Now, defensively, I think there's some talent here, and I think that, coupled with an easy schedule, you know, could burn me. But again, it's 21-1 for a reason. But I think when you look at what this team offensively could be, especially if they start to lose some bodies, the wide receiver core is not very deep. You know, Treylon Burks played pretty well last season, but if he's not going to be part of the picture, you got a bunch of pretty poorly graded guys that are underneath the DeAndre Hopkins, who is aging. We don't know what his production is going to be like here. If all of a sudden Ryan Tannehill is not playing particularly well, I think this is a group that, while they have a head coach that does maximize, you know, win probability and wins at the margins, I think this could be one that slides pretty far downhill by the time you get to week four or five. And it's a challenging schedule, I think, to start when you talk about teams that are similarly rated to the Tennessee Titans that they have to be on the right side of as they start that schedule out. So this is, at least from that perspective, it goes down the path that I thought could be potentially there for the Tennessee Titans, so we'll see if that's going to be the case. But overall, I think the important point here is it's not a receiving core with a ton of depth. And if Treylon Burks with this now here, I'm excuse me, I think you're a little worried about what this could be for Tennessee.
Well, this is already a team that, as great as Mike Vrabel's head coach is at getting the most out of lack of personnel, as he historically has been able to, I look at the offensive line and go, this will have to be Mike Vrabel's best coaching job probably ever to get this offensive line, even to being mediocre. I look at it as a complete disaster. It's kind of interesting, though, within the backdrop of all that, and realize part of this move was because of the original DeAndre Hopkins signing at wide receiver, but the Titans play the Saints week one, who have a lot of transition in their own right. Titans were catching 3.5 in that game. That'll be week one in New Orleans. That is one of our moves we're going to talk, right move or wrong move. That's now down to 3 pretty much market-wide, also combined with the fact the Saints will not have Alvin Kamara as the running back now that his suspension has actually been made, finally. And so I wonder, you're down on the Titans, but at least for week one, is that the right move or wrong move in your opinion?
According to the model, Ben, that would be the wrong move.
Oh!
I've got this projected at a 4.25-point win for the New Orleans Saints. So an edge there for me. And I will say this, in all seriousness, you know, not only with what I've done here, but just my own, like, you know, usual the way I go about things, I would circle the New Orleans Saints. Again, as somebody who would bet the Titans coming into this, right, as a candidate to go with the, or to have the worst record in the NFL, who, you know, has bet them under their win total, I'm not very high on Tennessee coming into the season. So I do think that this is something where I'd rather be on the side of the New Orleans Saints. Everything that I've done points me to New Orleans Saints or just a negative year for Tennessee. So I would say wrong move then, if that's the case, right?
To me, 3 is at least where I have these teams coming into the year. Sure. That's the right number. I don't blame bettors for grabbing the hook when it was out there. This also has all the makings of a super high variance game. And I don't know,
absolutely,
at least as my first glance as to the week one card, I don't know why you'd want to you'd have a super amount of conviction into that game unless you were able to get the three in the hooks, which have now since gone. That might get back there depending on where things go here next few weeks. Other news that comes out, this is the opening night of the season, and we finally saw a lot of interest in the Detroit Lions at 7. A few days ago, market finally got off 7. It's now pretty much consensus 6.5. So the Lions getting some action as a dog. Now, they weren't going to have wide receiver Jameson Williams anyway, suspended for 6 games to start the year, but he and Amon-Ra St. Brown each went down at practice yesterday, and sounds like Williams got the worst of it. He had a hamstring issue. He is now out for the rest of the preseason, and he will not even be on the field anyway till week 7 with that suspension. But irregardless, JVT, Lions getting some attention, moving off that key number of 7.
Now, if I go to like the model here, what I've poured into it, the more I've poured into it, the more the deficit has shrunk. You know, I've got this at just like a 7.9 point win for the Kansas City Chiefs. My own thoughts would kind of be on the side of, if we're talking 6.5, I'd rather be with Kansas City as well. I think the Lions are one of the teams that I have circled as I think the market has overvalued a bit. When you talk about a team that's third worst defensively by EPA standards, and you added some bodies in that secondary and, of course, on this defense as a whole, but I don't think they're very impactful players that can actually, and even if there's improvement, Ben, how much improvement can you make from being the third worst team defensively to, what are we talking about here? What's a realistic leap, sure, right? You know, 20th defensively, something like that. And against Kansas City that, yes, has questions at wide receiver, but I still think it has enough offensively with Patrick Mahomes to take advantage of what was one of the worst defenses out there last year. I think that this would be one where I would say probably, I think it's the right move in that I understand taking 7, but I think it's the wrong move in that I believe that if you're giving me under 7 with Kansas City at home to open this thing up, I would be on the Chiefs.
If it was 7.5 going down to 7, I would say
yes,
right move.
Right.
7 is, I believe, the right number. I don't understand, one, you know, especially at this point, bringing it down to 6.5. I would not be surprised. You have to think Chiefs will be in a lot of money line parlays week 1. A lot of 6-point teasers week 1 with two teams. Would not stun me if this gets back up to 7. So I would say, if you like the dog in the first place, don't panic. It's not like you've seen the last of the 7s. There's a long way to go before week 1. And also, when you're thinking about a complete rebuild on defense, not exactly the optimal start to that journey, JVT, when you're the worst yards per play defense, 30th against the pass, and you get a guy named Patrick Mahomes at quarterback as the Chiefs unveil another Super Bowl banner.
Yep. I think in today's day and age, we kind of alluded to this when we talked about preseason and in the way the offense is going and how we're getting higher scores. But there's already kind of this thought process that defenses in today's National Football League are really just beholden to the offense that they're facing for the most part. And if you can at least do some stuff in the red zone to keep teams out, then, of course, you're going to set yourself up for success. But between the 20s, you're just going to kind of bend to the will of the offense that you're facing. And I think that's going to be the case. Now, Detroit is a good offensive team, but there's also, I think, some signs that Jared Goff, you could make the argument, it could be due for some regression if turnover-worthy play rate continues, but those start to turn into turnovers. If there's any sort of regression in terms of him as a quarterback, I think there's some real questions about what Detroit can be, at least from the standpoint of where they're priced at the market, right? Minus 160 to make the playoffs, favors to win the NFC North, under a touchdown on the road against Kansas City. Those are the things that I have my questions.
Sure. As far as the other line moves for week 1, we're talking right move or wrong move here to start the hour on the Lombardi line. 2 games in week 1 that have already moved a whole 1.5. One due to big injury with Joe Burrow having the calf strain and his status still up in the air for Cincinnati. You can understand certainly why that game has adjusted based on just speculation there with the Browns going from 2.5-point home dogs now to 1-point home dogs. The one I'm interested in your thoughts in, though, is the Denver Broncos Las Vegas Raiders week 1 spot. In Denver, from 3 to 4.5, is that the right move or wrong move for you?
So this got bet up -3 to -4.5, right? So
yes, Denver getting the money.
I would say I would lean toward right move. I think the model that I put together actually has this essentially a pick, 0.7 point win for the Denver Broncos. I think a lot of that has to tie into the stats that I use. Of course, Denver terrible on offense last year. But I think when you look at it from the Raiders' perspective, I have questions as to how good this defense is going to be. Yes, in camp, and of course, as we saw against the 49ers, looking very opportunistic defensively. But I don't know if that's more about what they were facing. Again, talking about the offense you're beholden to, guys like Brock Purdy, Trey Lance, and others allowing this Raiders defense to perform well in joint practices. And of course, again, in that game on Sunday. But I got real questions as to how good this defense is going to be. And real questions about what this offense is going to look like. Obviously, Devontae Adams dealing with whatever lower leg thing that is. Jimmy Garoppolo has not looked good himself in camp and just doesn't sound like he's going to get a lot of time in preseason. Does that lead off to a poor start? I think I'd lean a little bit toward wrong move here.
Really? Wrong move. Interesting.
Yeah.
this is the one of all.
Excuse me, no, I'm getting my kiss. Right move here. Right, yes, excuse move, yes. me. Yes,
so you're a believer in.
Yes, I got my wires crossed. Yes,
no, come on, the model is throwing you off.
It
did.
It made the entire case. I made the entire case for the Broncos, and then of course, no, wrong move. No, right move.
I have the Raiders as the worst defense in the AFC heading in. If you look at you combining the front seven secondary groupings, and we talk about panic meter, but. We always focus on that. We don't focus enough on hype meter and does it get out of control. And this whole preseason thing for the Raiders, how many times have we seen a team look really, really good and prepared in the preseason, and then it's not even close to what you end up watching in the regular season?
Went undefeated last year, right? As we talked about with Josh McDaniels, he clearly wants to. He's talked about establishing a winning culture a lot last preseason and this preseason. I think that's kind of what this preseason success is about. And then them too, by the way. So I've got two bets on teams to have the worst record in the NFL. Tennessee Titans, Las Vegas Raiders are the other one. I think this is a team that if it goes south, I think it can go pretty far south.
Outside of Duke Shelley coming in as a corner, you look at the rest of that unit with David Long Jr., Nate Hobbs at corner, Trayvon Morig, Marcus Epps at safety, and that's just a whole lot of blah.
When you add multiple bodies to a single position in an offseason, you're essentially throwing stuff at the wall to see if it'll stick for you. And that's what the Raiders did in the offseason with their secondary. And I'm not really a massive fan of that when you're talking about one of the more important positions defensively.
Yeah, 31st in pass defense on an EPA per play basis last year. 30th in yards per drive allowed, tied for 27th in yards per play allowed defensively. And it's not like the pass rush really worries you. As much as Max Crosby is still a dude off the edge, what else really is there right now?
Him and Chandler Jones and a rookie who's unhealthy.
And can Jones somehow recapture the form? That's a big thing for the Raiders. So I definitely agree. That is the most of the right moves I really do like for week one. Mike Somich has some week one plays already. We'll get Mike's thoughts when we come back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's football season, and bettors know that this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSiN, and now is the time to become a VSiN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and NFL guides. Only VSiN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Sign up today for $199, and you'll receive both guides and full VSiN access all the way through the Super Bowl, or join us for $19 for your first month. And see everything VSiN has to up your betting game. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe for all your options and become part of the Sports Betting Network. Excited to get our guy Mike Somich on right now. Professional handicapper. He's been on with a Lombardi Line, Sharp Money, a bunch throughout the summer. So great to have Mike on as always. And we've been talking this NFL preseason week two lid lifter, JVT. I'm getting kind of pumped. We have so many opinions, so many thoughts, so many ways to bet it with the Browns and the Eagles tonight. What angle are you looking to attack there, Mike, as we get ready for week two to start in a few hours?
Well, we saw a rash of overs in week one of the preseason, which was kind of not the norm. We've seen the median point total go up 3 to 4 points here in week two. And I'm going to kind of stay on the over trend here. We've got Cleveland and Philadelphia playing tonight. And when I look at the preseason, I want to know what quarterbacks are playing. And it looks like we're going to get a full half from DTR, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who played at UCLA last year and has been a revelation so far in the preseason. He's been able to move the football both through the air and with his legs. On the other side for Philadelphia, we're getting a half of Marcus Mariota, it sounds like, and we're going to get two of the top four running backs playing as well for Philly. All of that leads toward points in the first half to me. I don't want to bet Ian Book on an over. He's going to be playing some of the second half in this game. But if I get Mariota and I get DTR, I think you're going to see points in the first half. So I went with over 17.5 points in the first half. I'd keep an eye on this one. There were some 17s that popped up. I'd obviously like the over 17 more. So make sure you're shopping around to try and get the best number. But to me, I think we're going to see some points in the first half of the game tonight.
So I asked Will, and I'll ask you, Mike, when it comes to some of these line moves for these preseason games, how do you handle them? Because one of the best examples recently, of course, is Sunday, right? Market freaks out when we realize that Jimmy G's not going to start. Some spots close 5 in favor of San Francisco. They lose that game. I'm kind of the mindset that when you see these line moves, I'd actually kind of rather go against them. Preseason, a lot of points, you're talking about 3.5, especially when it's really not based on any information for Philadelphia and only on the fact that Deshaun Watson's not going to play. I don't think he's going to play a big workload. What do you make of these line moves that you see pre-flop and what you want to do with them?
It's tough in the preseason because a lot of the line moves are based sheerly off of what quarterbacks are playing, really. And you don't dive into as much of, hey, are we going to get a second team offensive line, a third team offensive line? That makes a huge difference as well because you need to protect these guys. And then you have certain teams that are much more motivated in the preseason because you have positional matchups. So I care about where those positional matchups are as well. I think the Raiders are a good example. They have a lot of battles. They're not going to be a very good regular season team, but there's a lot of guys playing for a job. And so you're going to get a more motivated team out in those type of preseason games. So with the line moves specifically, I don't chase the steam. I think that's a bad way to go. Mm-hmm. If you can get in early, I think it makes sense. I was one of the people holding a San Francisco ticket, but I had him at 3.5, not the right. 5. And so if you can get in early and kind of try and get ahead of some of that information, if you scour Twitter, or X now, I guess, that's really the best place to get this information. And you can beat the book sometimes on these moves if you're following the beat writers specifically. So I'll keep an eye on the beat writers, see if I get in front of them. But once a number gets steamed out, I'm not one of those guys who's going to chase it, especially in the preseason where I'm betting 1/10 or 2/10 of my normal betting unit for an NFL regular season game. To me, chasing the steam, there's just better ways to do it.
Really quickly, it's actually pronounced Z. So just want to throw it out there on Twitter. So
we just keep changing it, man.
It's X. The insignia is an X, but it's pronounced Z. I just want to throw that out there.
Okay. Sure.
That's a fact. I'm just telling you.
I'm not saying sure.
Stormy denied it too. I'm telling you guys, you can deny facts all you want.
Okay.
I can't keep up with the Twitter news, so I'm just going to keep calling it Twitter because that's just a lot easier.
It's a lot easier to, you know, it's a lot easier to say. Like, follow him on X. It just sort of sounds like you're giving off a weird kind of thing. I don't know.
On Z.
Yeah, apparently that's what we're doing. 6-8, by the way. We were just talking about that, Mike. 6-8, if you had just blindly followed all the line moves of at least 2 points or more in week one of the NFL preseason. So, as you're talking about, not like it's been a cash cow by any means, just blindly chasing that steam. We were just talking about right move or wrong move for week one of the actual regular season, which we're excited to get to here. I mentioned how, you know, that Chief Lion game looks like it is just prime teaser territory for the two-team six-point teasers. Is that a thought you have as well?
It is. Look, I was surprised this one came off 7, especially with the Amon-Ra St. Brown news where it sounds like he's going to be fine for week one. But anytime you have an injury like that to an offense that really needs him to play well, it always surprised me when you see it drop down. I don't hate the idea of buying at 7, but look, this isn't going to stay at 6.5 once we get to kickoff. I rarely are going to bet a lot of money early on in the preseason in week one because I want to know where we're going to sit with injuries. But to me, this is one of the two games on the board that's never going lower. I don't think you're going to see KC -6, KC 5.5. I think you're much more likely to see it go KC 7 and maybe even 7.5 by kickoff, depending on how much public money comes in and what Amon-Ra St. Brown's status is in the game. So to me, if you want to lock in a teaser, now is the time to do it. I like Kansas City in the game. I have them as a little over a 7-point favorite. So I agree with JVT on that front as well. So I want to play them in a teaser. I'm going to tease them down to a 0.5. And then to me, the other game on the board where I don't think it's ever getting to 3 is this Green Bay Packers Chicago Bears game. I'm high on the Packers. I'm lower on the Bears than most people. I want to tease the Packers up to 8.5 in this spot and get ahead of that as well. I expect this line's going to go closer to 0 than it will up to 3. So again, I feel like this is a situation where you get in front of two separate lines that are never going in the other direction, and you can tease them both in that Wong area and get every single possible key number. So give me KC -0.5 and Green Bay +8.5 week one NFL teaser.
I like it. I'm in. Agree. All right. Before we get to another sport, anything else in week one that has stuck out to you, maybe that you haven't played yet that you're sitting back and seeing what the market's going to do with?
I may be a Cardinals better. I kind of hope we keep steaming this thing up here. I get that the Cardinals are going to be terrible. I just really don't trust the Washington Commanders. I don't trust Sam Howell, especially in week one. If this ends up going over a touchdown, to me, that's a buy point on the Cardinals. We'll see if that continues to rise here. I also agree with you. Look, the Raiders are going to be awful. I'm not sure why we've gone to 3 to 4.5 here in the Denver Broncos game either. It seems like crossing over that key number is surprising to me. I'm going to wait to see if this gets steamed higher, but if we get to that 5, 5.5 point, that's a buy point on the Raiders for me as well.
Oh, if what it's worth, a 6.3-point projected win for the Washington Commanders, so not really a ton of value there if you're going in and just laying it against the Arizona
Cardinals. I mean, 6 like feels fine, but like to your point, Mike, it also just anecdotally seems like that is like people are playing Washington in Survivor, which, right. I mean, take your life into your own hands with that.
Tell me, all three of us can see that, right? Like week one, like everybody's on the Commanders are probably top 3 Survivor team, and it's like final drive. Sam Howell's got the ball. They're down by 4, and they need to go in there and get it because that's exactly how the NFL works.
Like Survivor, teasers, Mike, money line parlays. Like I get it. And 6, again, I feel like that is the right number, but especially is that it would not surprise me if we get to 6.5 or 7, which just feels like we've gone a little bit too far there on Arizona.
It really does. And you talked about the survivor side of it. I've heard so many people say, well, this is the 1 week you can play Washington. Well, you got to get past week one to be able to win survivor. Now, if you're interested in buying back in, okay, I get it. Some of those pools have that availability. But do you really want to put your whole survivor season on Sam Howell's shoulders and really his, what I'm going to call his first real start here, because this is a new season where he's gone through training camp, going to get a look there. The Washington defense should be very good. But would anybody be shocked if this is like a 17-14 game late in the fourth quarter and it could easily go either way? To me, that's kind of what we're looking at here in this Arizona-Washington game. So I have no interest in playing Washington from a survivor perspective, because it's just, I don't want my survivor week to be dependent on Washington getting through with Sam Howell with his first start with an offense that I just don't have faith they can move the football. That defense should be very, very good. But I have serious questions with Ron Rivera and that offense.
Again, Mike Somich joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Give him a follow. Somobomb18 joining us here throughout the week, as well as on Sharp Money. A lot of great stuff as well over on the Z account. We'll plug there for Mike. Let's go MLB before we wrap up. A really intriguing series between a couple of NL West teams that are just sort of trying to find a second wind, especially for Arizona and San Diego. Rich Hill, the lefty, goes for the Padres today against Zach Gallen. I've seen a flip of favorites here. This open D-backs minus 115 overnight. Where do you stand on that line move here in the baseball today?
Interesting spot here. I mean, I can't believe Rich Hill was a big time post or a deadline acquisition here for the Padres. Just not one of those pitchers that you think of as someone who's really going to come in and be able to propel you into the playoffs. It's actually a rematch of a game over the weekend. The difference is that game was in Arizona. When you look at Zach Gallen's splits, he's phenomenal at home. Got almost a 5 ERA on the road. We know Rich Hill, not afraid to give up runs either. I had this game lined as a total at 9.25 when I made my numbers here. We're sitting at 8.5. I think this is a pretty easy play toward the over here for Diamondbacks offense that should be able to beat up Rich Hill again. And Zach Gallen, who's just not very good on the road. Mm-hmm. So for me, the over is the play here. I don't really have a huge lean either way. With the money moving toward the Padres, I would almost fade the move and go back toward the Diamondbacks. I played the Diamondbacks first 5 minus a half run when they were in Arizona. But again, you had home Zach Gallen, not road Zach Gallen. So I like the total going over here versus taking a side.
And you're also like the Mariners tonight, looking to lay it against the Royals?
They've been sneaky, one of the best teams since the break. They're 10-3 in their last 13 games. They just have the mojo going right now. You got a nice young team with a good offense. You got a bullpen game today from the Kansas City Royals. You got one of the better starting pitchers on the mound for the Mariners. I think they're going to cover the run and a half. You can get minus 125 out there. So giving the Mariners laying the run and a half today as
George
well.
George Kirby on the bump today for Seattle. That's a game that starts in about 40 minutes at 2:10 p.m. Eastern time. Mike, always great to catch up with you, man. Be well.
Appreciate it, guys. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you. We will continue the discussion as well on the lid lifter for preseason NFL Week 2 JVT, because Jake Trotter covers the Cleveland Browns for ESPN. Will join us right after this here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Legendary sports bettor Billy Walters sat down with Brent Musburger for an exclusive interview, and the only place to see it is on VSiN. Billy reveals his systems for betting the NFL, shares some unbelievable betting stories, and gives the details on Phil Mickelson's gambling, including trying to bet on an event he was playing in. Check out the interview next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, only on VSiN. That coincides with the actual day that book is being released, Gambler's Secrets from a Life at Risk. As we welcome you back, final half hour on the show, it is the Lombardi Line, presented by BetMGM, live from downtown Las Vegas. Great to be with Jonathan Von Tobel, Ben Wilson with you on a Thursday. We're ready for week 2 in the NFL preseason to kick off, and that's why we go to Philadelphia, where Jake Trotter has been, he's been covering the Cleveland Browns on the ESPN side of things and is ready to go as the Browns are in Philly after a week of joint practices. We have the Browns-Eagles tonight, line movement toward the Eagles at about 3.5 or 4, total at 35.5. So we've watched the joint practices all week. What's been your biggest takeaway, Jake, just from watching the ones go at it, at least in some stretches, and also a lot of action, too, for the backups in those joint practices?
Yeah, I think the Browns defense has showed that it could be one of the more improved units in the NFL. I mean, Myles Garrett, this is probably going to be the most talented defensive line he's played with in Cleveland, with guys like Za'Darius Smith, Dalvin Tomlinson. You know, offensively, you know, it's still a little bit shaky in the passing game. And that's going to have to come around for the Browns to be a factor this year. But, and I can tell you, the Browns got completely dominated by Philly in their joint practices last year. They didn't win this time around, but I think that they clearly showed that they've closed the gap.
So later tonight, you know, I know coaches sometimes like to talk about what some of the goals are for a preseason game. Has the coaching staff at all revealed, like, maybe what some of the things are going to work on tonight in this preseason game with DTR getting the start?
Yeah, well, first of all, none of the starters are going to play. None of the key guys are going to be out there. You know, I think it's just going to be, you know, this is DTR's first career pro start. He played in the Hall of Fame game off the bench. It was terrific. They really see him as their long-term backup QB of the future behind Watson. So I think, you know, they're going to try to put him into some favorable situations, continue to build his confidence, maybe some short throws, maybe get him, you know, running outside the pocket. But I think at the end of the day, all these preseason games, it's a little bit vanilla. You know, you're not going to see anything too crazy, or I don't think that Kevin Stefanski is going to show any cards from what he's going to do in that opener against Cincinnati.
Building on DTR really quickly, you said long-term backup behind Watson. Is there a chance that he could win the primary backup job, given how well he's played in this offseason?
I think there's a chance. I mean, it would definitely help them from a roster management standpoint, because right now they're keeping three quarterbacks with Joshua Dobbs. You know, I assume they'd like to get Kellen Mond back to the practice squad, but, you know, we'll see what happens with him. He's going to play the second half tonight. I think DTR is clearly ahead of Mond for the number three role. I don't know if they're there yet. You know, Dobbs is more experienced. I thought played well in that role at Tennessee last year, showed that, you know, he can give you competent quarterback play in a pinch. That would be rolling the dice, going with the rookie as your primary backup. But if it doesn't happen this year, I think it's going to happen in 2024. But if they felt like that he's ready, you know, he continues to play well, then, you know, you don't have to keep three quarterbacks. Then you can keep, you know, an extra defensive lineman, an extra offensive lineman, extra receiver. So it would help the roster elsewhere. I think there's a chance. I wouldn't bet that it is going to happen, though.
Sure. I guess Jake Trotter joins us right now at @Jake_Trotter, Cleveland Browns reporter for ESPN. Browns and Eagles tonight, kicking off week two in the NFL preseason. And he mentioned maybe having an extra piece to add on to the depth, whether that's maybe a D-line position that last year, worst team in football defending the run on an EPA per play basis. Even though when you look at the personnel, you go, that should be a much better unit than dead last. Where have you seen this offseason and especially training camp going as far as development of that D-line specifically?
Yeah, it's hard to know how they're going to fare against the run because they're not tackling in practice. They didn't even tackle in the joint practices with Philly. You know, training camp, you know, from our perspective, is about the passing game. You can evaluate that a lot easier than you can the running game. But there's no doubt they should be improved. I mean, Dalvin Tomlinson is way better than anybody they had last year. You know, he's got size that they didn't have last year. You know, they signed Shelby Harris, who's a veteran, you know, proven player. You know, he's a little bit older, but he can still play. You know, they got Jordan Elliott, who was a starter for them last year. Now he's probably in a number three role. They drafted Siaka Ika out of Baylor, you know, big defensive tackle. So just from like size alone, they're completely different from what they were last year. You know, I think the storyline to watch is going to be what happens at inside linebacker. I never would have thought that they would have missed Anthony Walker, their inside linebacker, the way that they did after he was lost for the year, early on in the year. Sione Takitaki played really well after getting moved to inside linebacker when they were down to like their fourth guy at that position, but then he got injured and was lost for the season. So those two guys are still working their way back. I think that if they're healthy, they should be in decent shape at inside linebacker, but neither one of them have really practiced, you know, full tilt yet. So, you know, if they can get those guys back, the defensive line just plays up to its potential or close to it in the inside. They may not have the best run defense in the NFL, but I would bet that they would not have the worst again like they did last season.
So obviously any team ceiling is going to be tied to the most important position, quarterback. As you've been at camp and watched him, we've only got to see five dropbacks in a preseason game. What's been your evaluation of Deshaun Watson?
You know, it's been up and down. You know, he's had some really good moments. He's had some bad moments. Quite frankly, it's kind of looked a little bit like it did in those six games last year where you saw the flashes, but not the consistency, which, you know, he's going to have. He's going to have to rekindle for the Browns to be a team that can contend in the AFC North. I mean, they still got a ways to go before the season opener, but, you know, he definitely has the talent to be the guy he was in 2019 and 2020. It's just, you'll see one great throw and then one not so good throw. he did play well in his one series in that preseason game against Washington, but again, only 3 for 12 yards. So it's really hard to kind of evaluate that. You know, did make some plays with his feet. You know, so we'll see. I mean, I the Browns are still optimistic, but I think to this point, it still remains a work in progress for sure.
Plus 380, by the way, third of the four favorites out of the AFC North at plus 380 for the Browns, 9.5. That win total heavily juiced to the under at minus 135. And outside of having a really good offensive line and a great backfield with the running back position to help out Deshaun Watson, you would think, Jake, somebody other than Amari Cooper stepping up would go a long ways toward that development. And that's, I think, the one positional group that a lot of us in the betting market have questions about is wide receiver. Who have you seen that's impressed so far, maybe outside of a Cooper in that wide receiver room?
Yeah, Elijah Moore. I think he's going to have a big year. It's already clear, you know, he's going to be a focal point for them offensively. They move him around. They put him in the backfield, outside receiver slot, you know, just trying to find different ways to get him the ball. If you play fantasy, that would be a guy I would grab, who I think people are not talking about. Like, would not stun me if he leads them in receiving, or at least receptions. He's already got a pretty good chemistry with Watson. It looks like they're much further along than, say, Watson and Cooper have been. So that would be a guy that I think could really help the receiving core. And, you know, the talent's always been there. You know, he had a weird year with the Jets last year. Their quarterback situation obviously played into that. The Browns are really excited about Elijah Moore.
By the way, JBT, just looking at the DraftKings season-long numbers, Amari Cooper, 72.5 is the receptions prop.
Yep.
Elijah Moore, 45.5.
Okay.
Could be a good look.
All right, so then let's. I'll ask you this, because I think, and asking, you know, where do they stand in the division, I think it's pretty clear, given the unknown of what Watson's going to be, their third right now, maybe fourth. So we'll ask it in this way, Jake. In comparison with Pittsburgh, the other team that they're going to be on paper dueling with for maybe third place in the AFC North, how do you think the Cleveland Browns stack up from what you know right now?
They probably have the biggest variance of anybody in the AFC. Like, I would not be stunned if they won 6 games. I would not be stunned if they won 12 games. And it's just going to come down to what version of Deshaun Watson are we going to get? Are we going to get 2019? Are we going to get 2020? Are we going to get 2023 or 2022, I should say, or somewhere there in between? And really, the answer to that is probably going to dictate their win total. I have them going 10-7. They do have a pretty manageable schedule outside of the division. You know, they play the 6 worst teams from last season. You know, there are some wins there for them. I think the defense is going to be better. But again, if Watson is the guy we saw last year, they're going to struggle at times. If he's like he was in 2020 or 2019, they could be a Super Bowl contender. So they're a difficult team, I think, to gauge, and it's just going to come down to whether you believe in Deshaun Watson or not.
Yeah, we're about to do Jake, our Defensive Rookie of the Year awards talk. How good did Jalen Carter look when you watched him in those joint practices?
Yeah, I think that it's unbelievable that he fell to the Eagles. Just their luck. He's going to be a good one, I think.
Have a sneaking suspicion that will be the case. I'm sure that was fun getting to watch in person. Jake Trotter does a great job covering the Cleveland Browns for ESPN. Follow him at Jake_Trotter. Browns and Eagles tonight, 7:30 Eastern time from Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. Always a pleasure, Jake. Thanks so much for taking the time out of a busy day.
Yep, see you guys. Take care.
Absolutely. And we will get into that, because we're going to finish up our show with the defensive awards markets. And yeah, Jalen Carter, he's second on the odds board, and would not be surprised that does not last long. Again, it's preseason, but I mean,
I'll save it, obviously, because we're going to do it, but I've got my question.
Oh, all right.
I
like it.
For a tease.
Guys look really good. That's all I know. 7-1 right now. Will Anderson is the favorite. We'll talk about that. We have our final thoughts on the show. I know JVT's getting excited because NBA, a regular season schedule, comes out in over an hour. So he's excited. We'll wrap up the Lombardi line right after this.
This is the Lombardi line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. Sign up with BetMGM, or you can log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm fired up, man. We're talking like modeling and stuff and nerd stuff, and it's great.
Completion percentage over expectation.
That's right, and what we're going to do and plug it in and how we weight it and all that. Oh, man, I can't wait to go home. I'm wrapping up. The plan is I've got a full, massive FIBA World Cup preview that I want to finish today to post up for tomorrow, because tomorrow we have a week until tip-off for the FIBA World Cup officially. By the way, Team USA, tomorrow, I think, 9 a.m. Pacific time, if you want to watch another friendly of theirs. They got two more left. And then after that, I'm going to crunch some numbers. I'm going to do some Excel. I'm going to all
you
sorts of stuff.
You've got a desktop computer, I heard?
I do. Dude.
Damn.
That is, I'll tell you what, it's like a 24, 28-inch monitor, whatever it is. Love it. Absolutely.
You didn't get like the Compaq 1998?
No, I think it was like an iMac or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We're not turning back the clock that far.
Yeah. No, well, as somebody who writes, you know what I mean? I do a lot of writing for the website, so it is very nice to have the desktop and, you know, another reason to just shut myself in my office and not pay attention to my family.
I'm very impressed that you're like my writing fingers. You know, I can't. As soon as I graduated college, I was like, I'm out.
I don't think I'm a good typist. Is that the term? Like, if I were to do a typing test, I think we should do one when we get done with the show. I think it maybe be above average, but I'm definitely not the best.
I'm at a 500 word limit, and after that, I just start get going stir crazy. So anyway, we do have a pro tip for the show, by the way, and then we'll get into our defensive award talk here. And we've had a lot of NFL Week 1 discussion today, which I think has been really beneficial. We're about 3 weeks out. Actually, it'll be literally 3 weeks exactly coming up at 8 p.m. Eastern here tonight until the Chiefs and Lions kick off Week 1. And so I think the big thing, if you're looking to get into these markets right now, especially because Week 1 has been out for such a good amount of time, really try to invest in lines that are either at the peak of the market or at the bottom of the market where you don't expect them to go any higher or lower. And that obviously depends on where your convictions lie. But take the Chiefs. Say that game, for example, Chiefs dipping from 7 to 6.5-point favorites. If you feel pretty confident about and you break down the market, there is really it would take a lot for Kansas City to go down to 6. JBT foresee that coming. So the Chiefs would be a good example. If you're targeting a line like that, if you like Kansas City, that would be the time to invest, whether that's in a straight up spread bet or if you're looking to tease Kansas City down, because based on everything we've watched and monitored with the market, that would only go back towards 7. Relative to the odds it goes down to 6.
Yes, I think this is a good one. I agree with every single bit of this. We know that that's not going to happen for Kansas City, a team that's going to be very publicly backed by the time you get there. And remember, part of the liability that builds up, as you mentioned, is teasers, and that will push that thing up. So,
boom. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so you said, nice little tease before the break, Jalen Carter, look at as the second favorite right now in the defensive rookie of the year market and go, as long as he gets the reps, it might not take long for him to usurp Will Anderson as the favorite in that odds board right now. Carter does have the highest handle, by the way, at BetMGM so far. Christian Gonzalez, for what it's worth, out of New England, highest ticket count so far. Where do you stand on Carter entering year one?
So I think he's going to be awesome. I don't think there's going to be question about it. I have two questions about this. The first of which is, is he going to play enough snaps? Is he going to be part of a rotation? Like, what's his real role going to be? And even if it's like a limited amount of snaps in terms of being part of a deep rotation, is that going to be enough? My other question is, do we trust, if you're betting Jalen Carter to win Defensive Player of the Year, do you trust voters to be able to realistically evaluate Jalen Carter, as an interior defensive lineman enough to give him the award? Or will he, despite justifiably being the best defensive rookie, not win the award because pick anyone, let's say Will Anderson, for example, just gets a bunch of sacks?
Yeah.
And you lose out on it. That would actually be my question. It really has nothing to do with him. It has more to do with his role, the snaps he'll play, and whether or not you trust those deciding on this award doing their job well enough to actually evaluate him properly. Because as somebody who, of course, covers the NBA day-to-day here in all of those awards markets, there's a lot of the times with Defensive Player of the Year over the last few years where you have real questions as to who won it because voters tend to get a little lazy with the analysis when it comes to defense, because in any sport, it's the hardest part of the game to analyze.
Sure, and certainly that's why you can find pretty widely varying numbers on this stuff. Like if you're high on Tyree Wilson with the Raiders, he's 6-1 at BetMGM, 10-1 at DraftKings. Will Anderson right now 5.5-1 at MGM, 7-1 there at DK. As far as if you're shopping around, as far as Defensive Player of the Year market, and I also think you bring up the point that makes these really hard to handicap because it's a lot easier to tie certain narratives to awards on the offensive side than it is defensively.
Sure.
As much as we watch and follow NFL, it's hard for us to have a real innate sense of how a guy is truly plugging a gap, on the defensive side week in, week out. So from the Defensive Player of the Year market, Aiden Hutchinson getting the most tickets. Micah Parsons, who had his, we talked about this on the show yesterday, had his left leg wrapped, did suffer a minor injury in training camp, but is not viewed to be serious there. Parsons, an overwhelming amount of the handle right now, and just updating the odds as we sit today here on Thursday, August the 17th, seeing Parsons as your favorite, plus 450, Myles Garrett, 6-1, TJ Watt, plus 750 there.
So I bet Myles Garrett to win the award. I think, what am I having? I believe it was 8-1. I'll double check. It was a bet here I made here at Circa. It is a small bet, but I think one of it narratively is I do think that not having one is going to help him out when you finally get to that point with some of these voters. I also think he's really set up for success. You know, with the addition of Smith there along that defensive line, taking out some pressure, I think he is going to have a really strong year. You know, I'm kind of high on Cleveland, as high as you can be, you know, given the unknowns of what's going on with them and at quarterback. But I think Myles Garrett is set up to have a really, really strong season this year. So it was a short term bet I was willing to make, but I'm willing to make it, you know, invest in that for the rest of the season because I think Garrett's in position to do it. I'd also argue, too, one of the things that really sticks out here, you know, Ben, what do you think of team success tying into a player, right? Because I think on this board, at the very least, like a guy like Max Crosby is one I would not want to touch. Because while Max Crosby might have a very strong individual year, I do wonder if voters hold against him being part of arguably one of the worst defenses. Sure.
In the league. And I look at it, you have either the one side of this, which is, well, guys on, say, Philadelphia, where it's just a loaded front, how good, how amazing do they have to be individually to get noticed compared to, say, a Crosby who might be the only, again, if Chandler Jones continues to struggle in his time in Las Vegas. But I definitely believe you're only in the conversation. It's one of those things, like, you're not even in the conversation if your team is bad.
Yes.
And so, like, if you're looking at all these Philadelphia guys, many of whom are priced a little bit longer simply because it's viewed to be more of a timeshare and there's going to be a lot of production to split across the board, but you're at least going to be in the conversation if Philadelphia, again, is winning 13 or so games and you can look at a lot of really, really good stats and go, all right, those are going to be guys right up there. And that's, I would imagine, why Parsons, especially in a weaker NFC, He is the dude on a defense that has really, really good personnel and he has a good amount of support, but tends to put up big numbers based on how opportunistic that defense has been. So I get why he's so short on the odds board. It's not one I would ever bet, but I mean, I get why that is the general thought process.
Tell you what, if you want a mid-range shot there, if you're somebody who, like me, is actually finding himself a little bit higher on Los Angeles, the Chargers, then as the season goes along, or as you get closer to the season, I should say, Joey Bosa, with the way that he can rush the passer, put up splash stats, is respected by the overall media. And if he has a strong year, that would put him up there with the likes of Myles Garrett and others from a pass rushing perspective. And his team makes its way to the playoffs or maybe even wins that division. Joey Bosa, I would not say no to. Of course, you want him to play more than 165 snaps, which he did last year.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But he would, I think, be, if you're taking like shots, I think that's one of the shots I'm willing to take.
From 50-1, now down to 35-1 at BetMGM. Real quick on Coach of the Year, the graphic is just Dan Campbell. It's just a bunch of Dan Campbells,
man.
And I do not understand that whatsoever. I have this weird thought, as much as I, you know, growing up in Wisconsin, watching a lot of Mike McCarthy coach teams, definitely not a big fan of his from an in-game coaching perspective, but at 40-1, doesn't that seem a little insane that McCarthy is viewed as just a drawing dead candidate?
Yes.
When if his team wins the NFC East, he's going to be a short shot for that.
By the way, this is our best graphic.
This is an awesome graphic.
This graphic should win an Emmy. Just like four. We should have four different versions of Dan Campbell. That'd be great.
Player Dan Campbell. Kneecaps Dan Campbell.
That's wild. Every single thing hits him, huh? I get it. It makes sense because of the market is so high, but I mean, you're looking around. How about head coach of the Indianapolis Colts and former UNLV quarterback Shane Steichen, baby. Let's go. That's not real analysis. I'm just throwing that out there.
Oh, I was going to say, did you bet that?
No. I would say if you're really looking at this market in all seriousness, you want a guy who's respected. And if you are somebody who, you know, a lot of people do think that the Steelers are a team that is going to be quite good. If you think Kenny Pickett's going to make a real step forward, Mike Tomlin's going to get a ton of credit. He's going to get a ton of credit for that team playing pretty well. And at about 20-1, I would not say no to Mike Tomlin, especially because at least voters last year showed that double digits, if you do a good enough job, is not a barometer that you have to cross.
Maybe a little lifetime achievement award as well. If it's, you know, over two decades of the non-losing seasons for Mike Tomlin, could be a possibility. JBT, always, man. Pleasure hanging out.
Thanks, man.
It's been a blast. For JBT, I'm Ben. Big thanks to Elliot Bowman, our producer, and the rest of the crew with Jeremy Wengler, technical director. Got Sergio Sanchez, Mikhail, Miranda, Andre Pariso, Troy Kinch, all helping out here at Circa as we say so long on this edition of the Lombardi Line.